Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Hello and welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take Newsletter, and I'm a broker here at Stone X. Work in the futures and options markets, OTC, swap structured products, and also for our producers and users, we do consulting. I do all three of those, so if you have any questions about what I do here in the grain and energy markets, please feel free to give us a call. My number is 312-706-7610. Email address is craig.turner@stonex.com. If you're a client and you hear something on here that you want to go over, reach out to me anytime. You also have my cell to call and text. If you're not a client and you're interested in working with us, please feel free to reach out anytime. If you like the podcast, please go to iTunes, give us a positive review, and send it along to anyone you think might like it. And if you want to check out the newsletter, you can go to turnerstake.com. So let's get into it here. We are now getting into the end of May. Let's hit the macro markets first for North America and the rest of the world, and then we'll get into the grain and oil seeds. So latest news on the U.S. front looks like GDP was down 1.5% for the first quarter, so that is not good. You get two quarters in a row of negative GDP growth, and that is technically a recession. Took a look at Canada. Canada's last report was actually plus 1%, so they're doing a little bit better, but the United States is lower. We're also taking a look at interest rates. That sounds like the Fed is pretty hawkish in their minutes here. Canada has a June 1 meeting, Bank of Canada. There is a poll of analysts that came out this morning from Reuters, pretty much locking in a 50 basis point hike. And I wouldn't be surprised if the next U.S. Federal Reserve also has another 50 basis point hike too. So interest rates are going higher. What's interesting about the global landscape or the macro landscape is growth is slowing down. Some countries may just have low growth. Some may go into a recession. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with China. Their COVID policies are certainly going to hurt their economic growth because they've been shut down so long. And also that's going to affect the rest of the world too. So I don't think China will go into a recession just because their growth rates are so high. And even if they did, I doubt they'd report it. But the U.S. will, it seems like. I mean, it's not for certain, but usually when you have one quarter of negative growth, you typically have two. It doesn't have to be that way, but a lot of times it is. If you look back through history, Canada might just be able to skate by on low growth for a while. And then what's going to have to come down here is the response by the government and the Federal Reserve. So in the past, when we haven't had a lot of inflation, the Fed and central banks around the world, when you had a recession, could lower interest rates in order to jumpstart the economy. But because we've had interest rates for so long, and we had a couple of financial crises and COVID, it's difficult for the central bank to lower interest rates. Plus, when I just think back on recent history, whenever they had to do that for an economic slowdown, we weren't fighting inflation. You can make 8%, 9% inflation year over year is strong. I mean, some commentators have called it, quote unquote, raging inflation. But I mean, any kind of qualifier you want to use there, I'd be okay with, because 8 or 9% inflation in a developed, mature, free market capitalist economy is not good. That really should not be happening. So the Fed is going to have to, and central banks around the world, are going to have to increase interest rates. And the problem is you got to fight inflation first. Inflation is part of the reason why we're heading into recession and why things are economic is slowdown. And that's the bigger problem. So the Fed and central banks, Bank of Canada, are not going to be able to most likely lower interest rates to help boost the economy. They're going to have to continue to increase interest rates to fight inflation. We'll just make it even harder for the economy to bounce back. It may prolong, a recession than it normally would have been. But, there's just no other way around it. One issue is, from an economist's point of view, one issue is much more important than the other. Now, from a politician's view or, from a government view or an organization like the Fed, where they do have, they don't operate in a vacuum. There is political pressure and pressure from the media and from voters and everyone else. Will the Fed be aggressive? Let's say 6 months from now, we're in a recession in the United States, and maybe Canada is getting dragged into it. Do central banks keep on raising rates to fight inflation, even if we're at about 6, 7, 8, 9%? We'll see what happens there, but that's what I think about going forward. If we go into recession, what happens with interest rates? But we'll see. We'll see what happens going forward. And that really is the macro landscape here. Energy prices continue to go higher. That doesn't help things for the consumer or for business. There's no real reason to see them break at the moment either. We are still using more than we produce. We still have issues out of Russia. And how they're treating the gas supply going into Europe. A lot of Western Europe and also here in the United States, energy policies are more centered around alternative instead of fossil fuels, which, for the environment, is one thing, but for the short term or near term economic needs and energy needs is another. And what we're seeing here is high prices. There's no real reason to think, unless you get a very big recession, it's hard to see energy prices come down. So we've got this macro landscape setting up where you're going to have high inflation with interest rates going up, growth going down, energy prices going up. And to me, I don't want to see a recession, but it's hard to argue against it. And you'll see when I look at the news stories coming out of major business outlets or even just major news outlets that have a business section to it. They try to be rosy about it, saying, it's not here yet or things could change. But and I think that's just natural. People want to be optimistic, especially on something like that. And I do too. But it's hard. It's hard to make the case that we're not going to have a contraction for a couple of quarters here. So hopefully I'm wrong, but it could be tough sledding here in the second quarter of 2022. And when I take a look back at the grain markets, and we'll roll into the grain markets now, but when I take a look into the grain markets and how we've done in past recessions, grains generally hold, and oil seeds generally hold up fairly well, especially the food component. You don't see big major changes out of the food. Now, could you see a little bit of change on the feed component because you have a little bit less demand for animal protein, which is more expensive? You can. Can you see more using less, let's say, corn for ethanol and vegetable oil for biodiesel? Because during a recession, a lot of times energy prices come down. That I'm not too sure this time around. I mean, we've got such an energy issue right now. We may not see that. Usually if energy, supply and demand is normal, are reasonable for energy prices and you get a recession, energy prices come down, and then you would think the use of corn for ethanol and vegetable oil for biofuels would come down too. I don't think we'll see that kind of that big of an impact this time around, just because of what's going on in the energy space. So we'll see. But that is what it's looking like. It looks like demand is actually going to stay kind of constant for the grain and oil seed markets. That is not a concern of mine heading into the second half of this year. Now, there are concerns and other things to talk about the grain markets. We'll start off with the topic on, which has been dominating the markets this week, is can the UN and NATO work out a deal with Russia, which would include, you know, obviously Ukraine, also Turkey, to get grain out of the Black Sea. And the idea would be Turkey becomes this intermediary where they, you know, keep an eye or kind of moderate or monitor, you know, grain coming out of Ukraine and then out of the Black Sea in order to have this humanitarian grain export corridor. Now, the markets have been selling off because of this news and these negotiations. And rightfully so. I mean, it's, you know, you see these headlines, the algos see the headlines, the traders see the headlines, they sell. I think the funds are actually short Chicago wheat now. And we've been up so high and so overbought in any kind of reason to sell and take profits and maybe even get short, you know, it is a story like that. And, you know, so that in one hand is to be inspected. Also, you know, we're going to have new crop supplies start at the export market in probably about 40, somewhere between a month or two. So let's just call it 6 weeks from the new crop harvest. And that's going to alleviate some tightness too. So those are all bearish factors heading in. The one thing I'll say about this is there's been a lot of talks between Russia and Ukraine in the beginning of the war for the ceasefires. Now, I mean, if we go back to the first one, it was, you know, the Russian troops were going back to the barracks and they used that as a diversion to then actually attack and invade Ukraine. So that was number one. Number two, they set up these, you know, human corridors and, you know, in Ukraine, and eventually Russia ends up bombing them. You know, there's the energy issue in European Union, and Russia says, you know, they'll try to negotiate and figure out things to, you know, provide energy to Europe, and then they shut it off. And now here, okay, so those are three examples of things didn't really go the way we thought they would or wanted to. And here we are again. And, you know, the cynic in me says Russia's doing this because, you know, if there is a global food shortage, Russia can come back and say, hey, we would have been happy to allow grain and oil seeds flow out of Ukraine. All you had to do was lift the economic sanctions. It's your fault. You know, that's the thing. So I almost have the feeling they're going through the motions here. And, you know, the West wants grain and oil seeds coming out of the Ukraine to avoid a food crisis. Russia has plenty of food. They're not going to have a crisis. And they're basically saying, we'll allow it, but you got to lift all financial and trade sanctions. And really, the West, they don't want to get into an armed conflict with Russia. When I mean the West, I mean NATO, Western Europe and the United States. And their tools, their only real tools as a deterrence, you know, against Russia is sanctions. So basically Russia is basically asking for a surrender, you know, in order to get grain out of the Black Sea. I just don't see it. And I'm sorry to say, and, you know, and if, let's say, worse comes to worse later this year and there is some kind of food security crisis, it gives them an out. It gives Russia an out to say, hey, we would have let it go. We would have been able to, you know, let grain leave the Black Sea. All you had to do was lift the sanctions. This is all on you. Yeah, and when I say you, I mean the West, NATO. It just, the cynic in me says that's how this is going down. I hope I'm wrong. And if I am wrong and they actually do get a deal, then we could come down $1 or $2. And if I'm a producer or a farmer, I need to be conscious of that. So if you do have new crop sales to catch up on that you're comfortable forward contracting, I would start to get aggressive here. I mean, spring wheat in the high 12s on the board is a good price. If we get up to 13, maybe even better. Hard red winter wheat is above 12. You know, for our U.S. clients that are in hard red, you know, that produce it, these are some good prices. Same thing with Chicago wheat. We're going to have, I don't know many soft red winter wheat, the Chicago contract producers in the eastern part of the United States who are having crop issues. Quite, I mean, I think those farmers should be selling and contracting this stuff, forward contracting it as much as possible, because that's not the crop with the issue. And that crop looks pretty good, I think. And you might as well just be taking the money and run. you know, because the guys in the Eastern Belt in the United States probably have the freedom to sell more because they're going to be more confident in the production. While I understand how the farmers in the western part of the United States, and then also the spring wheat farmers in the northern part of the United States and throughout the Canadian prairies, are more hesitant because they want to see what the production level is. I get that. And puts are tough. I do like putting in some put protection. I think you have to buy put spreads and sell call spreads, and they're expensive, but it's very difficult to hedge that market without doing it that way. So that's where I am on the wheat market. And for our end users that listen to this, for short-term coverage, and I'm going to say centered around July contract first, so anything in the cash markets, we're almost done with May, so let's just say June, you got to buy this break because you do not know what's going to happen in the Black Sea. And then I'd hold off. I mean, with further purchases, I can see if I'm an end user, maybe having some call spreads, maybe sell some put spreads to finance it, just in case this market gets away from us in the fall. But here's the thing, we're going to have more grain for on the export market in the next 45 days, and the market will reflect that. So I think end users need to secure what they need now on this break. They can wait a little while to see if things break even further come harvest. And also, we should get a lot of wheat acres in the southern hemisphere based on prices, where prices are now. And then if I'm a farmer, whatever I feel confident in selling, I would look to buy some puts and sell some call spreads just in case we break lower. And I might even get a little bit more aggressive on next year's crop and planting some hedges in there just because acres are going to come out, right? So I think the farmer for next year's crop can be a little bit more aggressive on pricing. The end user could let it go a little bit, just playing the odds here on, because when you take a look at acreage and yield and supply and demand, every month it seems like the Black Sea gets a little bit better. Ukraine finds ways to get grain out of the country. And even this whole Black Sea doesn't work out, which I don't think it will. I do think they'll be able to get grain into Poland and then through, you know, countries throughout Europe. And what that may ultimately allow is Germany and France to export more, because more grain is coming from Ukraine into Europe. France and Germany don't have to feed Europe as much, right? Because Ukraine can take care of that. And then you can increase exports out of Europe. I do think that's eventually how it goes. Will it be more costly? Yes. It'll take longer. There's not as much capacity now. But the thing is, I'm not worried about price in this situation in the next 6 months. I'm worried about just availability. And you know, when it comes to wheat, people will pay up for it. Governments will pay up for it. They will pay the more expensive logistic costs to eventually get it done. So I do think that eventually works itself out. But the wild card clearly is what's going on with Russia and Ukraine. And it's going to take some time. When I take a look at corn, you know, it's kind of the same deal. A lot of corn has to come out of, you know, come out of Ukraine, not as much as the sensitive as the wheat market, but it definitely counts. When you take a look at, you know, some of the numbers, when I look at the balance sheet going forward for corn and soybean, for corn, you know, we have 90, let's say we have 88, 89 million acres this year. It's hard to get above 90 million acres next year because soybeans and wheat are all going to be tight. We're going to have the situation for another crop cycle of probably tight stocks, some tighter than others. Oil seeds, which we'll finish up on, look the best. The balance sheets get solved first for oil seeds, then corn, and then corn and wheat. Kind of depends what happens there with the Black Sea. And corn will be elevated. What's going to be interesting about corn is, you know, we've got late planting here in the United States. We'll probably lose some acres. We're not going to have the production that we need out of the Black Sea. And we have high energy costs. And we need to feed something. We're not going to be able to, wheat's not going to, you know, you're going to probably discourage as much feed wheat as possible. So, you know, meal probably comes more into it, but you need a big soybean crop or a vegetable oil crop, or I'm sorry, an oil seed crop to get that meal. And we're having shortages in there too. So corn most likely stays elevated. Let's call it a $6 to $8 ranging market right now, depending on how things break. To potentially go higher if we get a drought in North America this summer. But if we get, you know, more acres and garden like weather, we could even be into the fives by harvest. So a ton of a huge range of possibility in the corn market right now. Finally, I'm going to just, we're coming up here on 20 minutes on the soybean market and the canola market. So major oil seeds and minor oil seeds. When I take a look at the supply and demand, I see those balance sheets loosening first. When you have 90 million acres of soybeans planted, you get about over 20 million acres of canola planted. You get a normal palm crop, and you know Russia will have a lot of sunflower. There's sunflower issues coming out of Ukraine, but there will be supply coming out of Russia, which will, you know, feed into the countries that are friendly with Russia. Oil seeds look just a little bit better. I can see the United States soybeans go to a 300 or 400 million carryout if we have some good yields. What's interesting about Canada is ending stocks will probably stay around the same, but in this crop year, we had the price ration 6 to 7 million metric tons of exports. Next year, with some decent yields, it only have to be 1 million metric tons. And then the year after that, with over 20 million acres and some decent yields, we go back to adequate supplies where you can export and use whatever you want, and you'll have more than enough on the ending stocks. And the market's going to see that calculation. So I think what that eventually does is there's definitely room to run to the downside once the market is comfortable with canola acres with yields, and same thing with beans. So we'll stay elevated just because of inflation, and some of the other markets are elevated, and there is a substitution, and you know, you can't have, you know, there is some kind of a substitution, whether it be for food, feed, energy, you know, in those markets. But could soybeans, if we have a good crop, could be 12 or 13 at harvest. I think canola could be 800. And here's one other thing, another reason why vegetable oil and oil seeds get solved first on these tight balance sheets is not only, you know, does the Canadian numbers work out well for canola, we just need one or two years of solid production to, you know, to get back to things. When you take a look at also Brazil and Argentina, they can actually increase farmland. So at a rate of around, let's just call it 3% per year. Well, the United States and Canada are tapped out, and most likely in North America, you know, we're going to have either a constant, you know, or you maybe even lose a little farmland every year as suburban populations grow. But in South America, they can increase farmland about 3% a year, and they do a ton of soybeans, right? So that's going to just help out with the overall, with the picture overall. There'll also be a very big incentive to grow as much palm in the eastern part of Asia. So what I think is eventually going to happen here is the soybean and palm, rapeseed and canola markets get solved first in the balance sheet. That'll help out with sunflower demand. And then you can also even start to see acres switch to corn and wheat in year two if the Ukraine Black Sea issue is still ongoing. So I know those are long-term projections, but when you take a look at the trends in the balance sheets and acres, you know, between, let's say, new crop this year and next year's crop, and then you go out one more year and you kind of take when we use our models and take a very big picture, you know, look at the grain markets based on some different scenarios, that's how it works out. So if I'm marketing right now, I want to make sure my canola and soybeans are getting marketed, and we're using these high prices to start the hedge. And if I'm going to go out to next year's crop for anything, it would be in the oil seeds at the moment. Second corn and finally wheat, and just because wheat's such a huge wild card for many, many reasons, as we were all aware of. So that's where I am right now. If you are a spec trader, I'd probably be looking to get long on this break for the short term, only because seasonally weather markets happen in June. And if you get a weather market, we're going higher. That'd be the short-term spec play. I have no problem with that. But once the 4th of July comes around, we definitely turn into a bearish period, unless there's a drought. I mean, in drought years, we go up in the we go up in the summer and fall, and that's what happened in 12. But barring that, we usually come down. The weather premium comes out. So if I'm a commercial buying short term, putting off purchases for the end of the year into next year, farmers, make sure you're caught up on sales, and we may even want to start looking selling further out. So that's where I am. If you have any questions, you need any help with your marketing, trading, buying the commodities that you need, my number is 312-706-7610. And you can also email me at craig.turner@stonex.com. All right, hope everyone has a great rest of their week. We are closed Monday for Memorial Day, so next week is a short weekend. Everyone have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you soon.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels Trading Broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors, such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.